Welcome to the Gravity Well podcast with Alex and Jenny. Here, you break down heavy ideas with us to understand their complexities and connections. Our mission is to work through your dilemmas with you, in conversation and process, making our world a better place for all.
We acknowledge that we live on the traditional territories of Treaties 4, 6, 7, 8, and 10, the ancestral homelands of diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples, whose ancestors have walked this land since time immemorial, and whose histories, languages, and cultures continue to influence our vibrant communities. We pay respect to Indigenous people through our ethical relationship-building efforts. Our community agreement asks for genuine conversations, real hearts, open minds, and different perspectives. In conflict, let's rely on our 6W system and live participant feedback. What matters most is finding common ground.
We dedicate this podcast to our children, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and all future generations. The Gravity Well is on YouTube and streaming wherever you get your podcasts. Join us at thegravitywell.net.
Welcome. I'm here live with JB Burrows. Thank you, JB, for being here, especially on a holiday day. Didn't think about that when I got so excited to invite Smart Voting Canada here to discuss the election, the 2025 Canadian election. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Yeah. So just to set the stage, I just want a funny story. I went to the Liberal rally in Calgary here. Cut the line because it was a huge lineup. I was really surprised and impressed to see how many progressive people were out in Calgary at the Stampede Grounds to meet Prime Minister Carney. And these lovely ladies standing behind us, we asked them, do you mind if we hop in? And one said she was working and we got talking. So a friend of mine, Claire Kratz, who's been on the show before as a guest, her and I were just discussing, she lives in a riding that has two strong progressive candidates, I should say. You know, full disclosure, I am a progressive. I am someone who's looking to help us move. Well, let's be clear. We're in economic war, at least, with the United States right now. Our country is on the line. It's been made very clear that our country is on the line. And we have evidence that our Conservative Party is aligned with that vision of, and I know it hasn't been said outright, but there is alignment between those parties. There's evidence I can speak to from, you know, oil and gas executives talking about their connections with Washington, et cetera. So there's lots of reasons to be concerned that this, the Conservative Party of Canada is aligned with the direction of the U.S. government and potentially trying to annex Canada. So to me, that's what's on the line. I'm a geophysicist by background, became a liability expert in the oil and gas industry, and want us to follow the laws of the land. So, and you know, Canada is my home. Obviously, I'm a very proud Albertan. Yeah, and the last thing I will say is I split the vote. You know, well, I don't necessarily know if I did that, but I ran in the 2023 election as a what I thought was for a progressive party in Alberta. And I'll try and be specific. The riding I ran in went conservative by 147 votes, and I got 777 votes. So my votes could have swayed the election on the day that people voted. So anyway, that's my backstory and why I'm really excited to be talking to Smart Voting Canada. So JB, would you mind taking a moment, just introduce yourself, tell us about how you started Smart Voting Canada, and then a bit about it itself. Thank you.
Yeah. So hi, everyone. My name is JB. I founded Smart Voting Canada just before the recent Ontario election that we just had. I live in Ontario. Sorry, Albertans, but yet another Ontarian talking to, you know, Alberta about what's right and wrong. I started it just before the Ontario election, but this has been an idea that I had since the 2018 Ontario election. I was a poll worker at the time. And I remember counting the votes in my deep, deep, deep urban Toronto riding. And I'm like, my poll went conservative. And I didn't understand why. Like, I live, like, this was one of the most, at the time in Ontario, a very liberal riding. But the riding ended up going liberal, but my poll itself, my particular poll, didn't. And I was like, whoa, this is confusing because I live here. I've lived 20 minutes down the road. Like, it was very confusing. And I realized as I counted the votes that, you know, there's a split. We have the Conservative who got, I don't remember the numbers, it was years ago, but say 100 votes. The NDP got 30 votes. The Liberal got 50 votes. The Green got, you know, another 10 votes. And when you added it all together, I was like, oh, this is a split. Like, this didn't represent what the riding or this particular group of people that were assigned to this poll actually wanted in this area. And that kind of said, we need to change it. So I originally went to school for political science and journalism and broadcasting. So I had this kind of canning ability to make a thing that kind of works. So I started to build a model. I bought the domain, and over COVID, really, I slowly just picked away at this system that helped determine who was the best candidate to win, to not split the vote, not just at a particular poll level, but also at a riding level and a broader regional or provincial or country federal level. Then COVID hit and I had job changes, as we all did, and I never did anything with it. And then finally, after when Doug Ford called his snap election here, I was like, it's time. It's time to turn this on, and it's ready. I was secretly testing it during the last BC election, the Saskatchewan election, the New Brunswick election, and the Nova Scotia election. And we got our accuracy, or I got my accuracy in the predictions, almost as high as 98% in some cases. I got the Saskatchewan election bang on. I didn't get a riding wrong. So what that tells me is that the model and the algorithm that I was building over the years and fine-tuned to get even more accurate was ready. And in the Ontario election that we just had, we boasted about a 95% accuracy for the predictions that we have. And why that matters is because if we have a good accuracy, then we feel confident in the predictions we make to not split the vote, because we know the numbers are good, and that makes more of an impact in actually rallying people and stopping people, because they see, hey, smart voting was right, and we flipped this riding away from the Conservatives. We stopped the Conservatives from winning 12 ridings in Ontario in the last election because of strategic voting. Huge win for us in just 20-something days of popping this thing up. And now the federal election's here. We have almost 10 million hits on the website since the start of the election across this country. That's not unique people, but that's just how many visits we've had to the site all in Canada. We sold about 500 to 600 lawn signs skittled across this country. The response has been absolutely astonishing. Like, it not... I was happy if like 1,000 people went to the site and said, hey, this is really cool, JB. But like, this many people is like,
wow,
blowing right. my mind. And now we got an amazing team of volunteers, 12 volunteers, bipartisan, from former Conservatives to Liberals to New Democrats to Greens, all getting together and with this common goal to give us true electoral reform, stop splitting the vote, and let's not be like the states. Cool. Like, can we agree on that? Like, that's kind of the main point here, right?
Yeah.
Preventing this thing. So.
Right. I mean, we're seeing how unsuccessful that's going in the United States right now for everyone. Let's be clear. This isn't
going great.
Yeah. So I just want to reiterate a couple things. So you've tested this thing. You started it in COVID. Did you get a chance to test it at all in the 2021 election? I was just curious.
I did, but more that was... We'll get into it, I think, but the challenge with doing this kind of thing is you have to make a prediction at a riding level when you don't necessarily have data from the riding. So I ran into this issue in 2021 federally, where I was building out the model and I could make the predictions, but I'm like, I don't trust this because this is off of some national poll and they only got 200 people in this riding. So I really needed to take the time to hone in the model a bit and work the code to accommodate for these regional sways. And I'll be honest, in 2021, I still have the sheet somewhere deep in my drive, but I biffed it. Like, there was just like, I was wrong, like across the country. And it was because I didn't have demographic data factored in, which was a big, big factor. And I spoke with a couple friends who also know how to build these things out, and we all suggested and agreed that what we needed to do was we needed to take these polls that we get from the national level, which inside the national poll, there's regional polls. So we know how many people in Alberta answered the poll. But what pollsters have started to do is give us demographics inside of that. So we know how much 18 to 35 year old males answered the poll and 65 plus women and what their income levels are and what their employment status sometimes is. We even sometimes get raw postal code demographic data. So we know that this is from this, you know, T4A postal code or whatever, right? Right. With that, we can then take existing demographic data from Statistics Canada, do some math and figure out, oh, well, we know 18 to 35 year olds in Alberta are leaning this way. And this riding has this many 18 to 35 year olds. So we're able to kind of math apply some math to that and get our predictions. And that was the secret sauce. That's what really honed in on that accuracy. So
great. Yeah, thank you. And yes, we are going to get into that a little bit more. You've tested this at a provincial level. You saw almost 98% comparison to the Saskatchewan outcome, which I'm very interested to hear more about. Okay, mm-hmm. What I'd like to get into now, if you don't mind, is, you know, I brought up my concern. And so can you help me? You said that you swayed, for example, I think you said 12 ridings in the Ontario election. Can you talk about the concern, the vote splitting concern, and how you predicted this change in those ridings, for example?
Yeah, so the vote splitting, for those who are unaware, is not unique to Canada. It's a issue that happens around this world in democracies where you have ideological parties that overpopulate, so to speak, in a certain way. In Canada, if we remember back to those who are old enough, back in the 90s, the Conservatives were severed. There was the Reform Party, there was the Progressive Conservative Party, and they were splitting the vote on the Conservative side. And there was, you know, the Jean Chrétien era, the Conservatives were not around. They were just this distant party that didn't exist. And Reform was this pesky party in the West that was just kind of causing issues. And they merged famously and formed the modern day Conservative Party that we know today. And
under
in Canada,
Stephen Harper, right?
I think Harper was the orchestrator of a lot of that merging. And that's ultimately why he became the leader. I was just a kid when that happened, so I can't remember too much about that. But now what we have in the modern day political landscape is we have Conservatives aligned. Like they're the right. If you're a right voter, you've got one or two, but the PPC is not really a viable. They don't really have a lot of viability. So really, there's just the Conservatives. The other side, though, you have the Liberals, which Liberals are the Liberals. They're always this like can potentially be the strong governing party. But then you got the New Democrats, which has a lot of support in more urban pockets, you know, your Edmontons, Hamiltons, Vancouver Island, Vancouver itself, even Montreal has a lot of New Democratic pockets in it that can get anywhere between 20 to even 100 and something seats if there's a good leader like we saw in 2011. Then the Greens. The Greens have been steadily increasing their vote share every election as we've gotten through their progress. And then in Quebec, there's the Bloc, the pesky old Bloc that do take votes away from progressive sides. So depending on where you live, you have a lot of choices on the left. And voting for one or the other is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I don't shame Liberal voters as a new Democratic voter myself. I don't shame Green voters if that's the way you want to go. It's just there is a split. And when we look at the current projections on smart voting, there are 34 ridings as we speak that in this country that if they aligned and picked one candidate, the Conservative wouldn't win because there's just not enough votes for the Conservatives in there. But the left is splitting and we're seeing a really, really noticeable issue with that on Vancouver Island, and it's a three-way split between the Greens, the New Democrats, and the Liberals. Edmonton is another one. Edmonton's just like divided like crazy right now.
Well, I'd like to speak a bit about Calgary too, because that's where I am, of course. But yes, I looked at the results from the BC election because I was very intrigued by, because people were saying, oh, you know, the it's very conservative there, but no, the reason why the Conservatives won in a lot of cases is because of this vote splitting that you're describing, or at least that's how I interpreted the data.
It's not a biasy thing. It's not a partisan thing. It's not anything like that. It is entirely just the numbers. And Sure. Not every liberal voter is going to go vote New Democrat. Some of them might go vote conservative, and that's fine. Not every New Democratic voter is going to vote liberal. We're not asking for, like, I'll use Calgary Centre, for instance, as an example. We currently have the Liberals leading with 45% of the vote there. The Conservatives also have 45%, and the New Democrats are sitting with 6, and the Greens have 2. So that is a situation that we don't need all 6% of those New Democratic voters to go vote Liberal. We just need 1-2% of that to understand the assignment here, that this will stop, this will unseat a Conservative and take a win for the Liberals. Yes, not great if you are a New Democratic voter. You kind of swallow your pride there. But also, what's worse?
Well, this is where I have to be honest with you. So two things. I know the NDP candidate in that riding. So his name's Beau Shaw. Mm-hmm. I've known him for at least a year now. He's a very strong, social justice leader in this city. And so I really am doubtful that those numbers make sense from somebody who knows a bit about Beau and knows a bit about the community. So can you help us understand, is that one of those ridings that you have specific numbers for, or is it a projection based on national polls? And the last thing I'll offer you is just in the same vein, is that it's my understanding that Alberta specifically is not polled as much as other areas in the country. Again, this is my ignorant question, but if you can just help me understand those two things, thank you.
Yeah, so the thing we need to remember, that if you live in an urban center, you're going to get a lot of polls. That's just the reality of it. It's more of a conversation if we were to talk about like Yellowhead or these really like rural ridings, even in Alberta, even in Ontario. The rural ridings don't get a lot of love, so it is hard to make those projections or have a lot of confidence behind those projections. But in Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, like all these bigger cities, we do get a lot of regionalized data, and we do actually get pretty specific data. So we got a Nanos poll today, just about an hour or two before we started doing this. And they have the Liberals at 45% and the Conservatives at 37% nationally. But when I break that down, I have Alberta data, and I have the Liberals in Alberta at 30% of the votes. Conservatives at 56. That's not a surprise. That's just pretty general for Alberta. But that's Alberta. Like, that is people from Alberta answering this poll. And I'm sure this is just a summary that I'm looking at, but I'm sure if I even go into the actual PDF that's probably sitting somewhere in my email, I would get a lot more regionalized. And I bet you dime to dollar that there is some Calgary data in there that I could extract. And then this is where weighting comes in. This is where our algorithm applies, because one of the things that we do, and this is where actually AI is actually a really helpful tool, is I can give all of this data to an AI model and say, run what we call a Monte Carlo simulation. And a Monte Carlo simulation, very complicated to break down, but essentially it takes this data. You tell it, this is the party. This is where voters in this party will typically sway. This is the margin of errors, blah, 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 blah. Simulate 1,000 elections and let me know what you got, right? And I can sit there and watch it just spit out these numbers, right? And it accounts for human fluctuations. It accounts for voter turnout issues. It accounts for historical voting records, demographic data. All of this stuff is factored in. And Monte Carlo models are widely used. It is the standard simulation when simulating elections, because they are pretty good at getting it. They've gotten really, really good at doing it. And these AI models just get smarter and smarter and smarter with the more data that I feed this thing. It's understanding better. And this is what I tell people is, when we first started it, when we launched the federal model and the numbers were all over the place and people were emailing us, there's no way there's this much liberal support in this riding. And now they're seeing the election play out, and we're seeing less and less in that because people are talking in their communities and saying, yes, there is this support. We've gotten apology emails from people being like, I thought you were wrong, but now I'm starting to see that you are probably tapped into this. So, not to toot my own horn, but like, we've gotten data from Calgary to answer your question. I can't speak to this poll directly, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, thank you for that clarity. Cause I, and you know, I was mentioning offline Lisa, who is, speaks on political issues in Calgary for us, was describing some of the close ridings, the ones that have this potential opportunity to be strategic, the couple in Edmonton, Greasepaw, and us. Is it, maybe you can help me. Is it center?
So we have Edmonton, Griesbach, Edmonton, Manning, Edmonton, Northwest, Edmonton, Riverbend, and Edmonton West. All are considered toss-ups where the numbers are margin of error. Like it could go either way, flip of a coin, but is a vote split. And 1, 2, 3, 4 of those are existing conservative ridings. One of them is one of the new ridings they created. So we don't really have any data from that. It's brand spanking new, but only one of them is an existing new Democratic riding, which is Edmonton Griesbach with Blake Desher.
Right. So. Yes. And an Indigenous member of the.
Yes.
Right yes. now. Yeah. So there's a big push for that on social media to help him get elected. That's one of those.
I would love for Blake to take it. I want Blake to win this riding because I think Blake is a fantastic member. And this just goes to show that while overwhelmingly my model is recommending liberals across this country, there are pockets that recommend New Democrats, recommend Greens. I just spent the day in Kitchener Center meeting with Mike Morris, who's the Green Party MP there. One funny little tidbit I will share to everybody, if I can, is if anybody who's worked or seen a member of parliament trying to get reelected is like hanging out with a bunch of squirrels. They just get so distracted from everything because somebody wants to come in and they want to shake their hand and it's really hard to get a conversation in with them. And I get it. He's trying to get his job back, right? I totally understand it, but it's fascinating to watch just this process play out. And early voting's today too. And we're seeing record turnouts across this country. Anyways,
I loved that offline just before we went live, he was talking about how this is the one area. Is it in Toronto that has it's all green signs?
Kitchener. About an hour and a half from Toronto. Kitchener Center is a tech town. A lot of big tech companies' head offices are in Kitchener. So Google, Deloitte, Skip the Dishes, Uber, you name a tech company, it's got an office in Kitchener. BlackBerry's originally from there, right? So very educated town, very academic town, lots of people who have university degrees or higher. And that's very telling that the Kitchener Center, where all of these people live and work, is voting green, which is kind of interesting to think about when you break it down, but from a demographic perspective.
So. Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's very interesting. And, you know, I think it's good to have diverse opinion. Like this is the thing is I'm a bit nervous about potentially getting fewer parties in the not legislature. What's it called? In
the House.
Thank you. The House. My goodness. So, yes. So where there is an opportunity for there to be a candidate with a different voice, I'm really thrilled to know that, especially that it's playing out in your analysis. So how do users decide? So I'm going to use I looked up my riding from last election, the 2021 election. There was about 31,000 people that voted conservative and just over, I think it was 22,000 that voted differently. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I voted NDP last time. You know, I've voted every party pretty much. I've voted green. I've voted conservative even in some cases. But I'm looking to vote liberal based on my own assumption of the candidates I see, and then also based on your analysis. So that's one example. I'm in Calgary Signal Hill. It's not one of those ones that's looking like it's close, but you never know, right?
Wow. Well,
but anyway,
crazier things have happened. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So, but can you help people understand how to use your system? Can you walk them through the smart voting system?
So the beauty of smart voting is we do all the heavy lifting for you. We've done the math, we've done the analysis, we've done the number crunching, and we've based our numbers off of data. And I want to make it clear to people. Oh, am I gone? There I am. I'm back. Let me just repeat that. So That's okay. We base our analysis off of data. I'm not sitting here with my spreadsheet, my master sheet, as we call it. My master sheet's our Bible. Nobody sees it. There's only a few people that have access to that sheet because it's a very powerful sheet. But we have a bylaw in our organization that sheet cannot be touched by any human. It is used as a reference tool to see what the model spits out. This hits my email box from our system that generates this sheet around noon Eastern every day. I look at it for a bit, look at some trends, see where things are going, and I put it up on the site, and that's that. This system automatically picks who the right person is, who's the statistically best person to beat the conservative candidate in that riding, or prevent it from going conservative, depending on your situation. And it does that through a bunch of different logic and rules. For the first things first, it's told never to pick a conservative. And the second thing is it looks just at the numbers. Who has the highest percentage? If the liberal is sitting there with 50%, the New Democrats at 49, and the Green, that's too high of numbers. But if it's close, it'll always favor the highest person. Now, if it's tied, if the numbers, 35-35, right? It looks at the swing, and a swing statistic is how much that candidate has grown or decreased since the start of the campaign, because that is a sign of momentum.
Oh, wow.
How is that candidate growing? And there is some cases where this upsets people because they look at our numbers and like, we've been an NDP stronghold, or NDP's always been second forever. But the NDP's polling numbers, not just nationally, but regionally across this country, are decreasing. So when we have to break a tie, who are we going to pick? Are we going to pick the liberal candidate who is climbing in the polls? Or are we going to pick the New Democratic candidate who's decreasing? And that's that tiebreaker. If that is tied, it always goes to the incumbent, if the incumbent is one of the people that is in the mix here. So we do favor incumbencies because incumbencies do matter. They do have a factor. Yeah. Even on top of that, incumbencies are weighted in the model. So there is a couple situations where Hamilton Center was a lot like this for a while, where Matt Green was actually losing in the number technically to the conservative. But because he was the incumbent and he's a popular incumbent, he was weighted heavier. So technically he was 2 points down, but we were still saying that he's probably going to win because of the incumbency bias and candidate popularity. Obviously leader seats have a big weighting, like Pierre Poilievre's seat in Carleton is going to have a heavy weight for him because he's the incumbent. Mark Carney's seat right next door in Nepean is also weighted heavy for Carney. Jagmeet Singh, unfortunately, is probably not going to win a seat even with his weighting. He's just not there. Wow. He's third in his own riding. And Elizabeth May's riding in Saanich, Guelph Islands in Vancouver Island. It's been ping ponging back and forth between her and the conservative. She's there, but another example where the waiting for her is playing her favor. It's tough. It's how do you determine popularity, right? That's the hardest thing for us to make a prediction, is how do you determine a candidate's popularity? And some of that just comes from how many times they appear in the media. Where do they sit in the House? Are they a prominent member? Are they a cabinet minister? There's ways that we can do it. And after the Ontario election, that was the first thing we looked at, was our weighting right? And then we can tweak that to be even more accurate.
And what did you find?
In Ontario, we were pretty good. We got the weighting for the candidates pretty good. There was a couple that we missed. We underestimated the New Democratic support, we overestimated the New Democratic support in Hamilton, and we underestimated the New Democratic support in Toronto. We missed that. It was just a shift in the wrong direction that we couldn't capture, but we were still 95% accurate across the province. So
right.
We're gonna miss, and that's just the reality of it, right? When you're dealing with data and numbers.
Yeah, of course. And, there's just so many things at play. Like you're saying, to hear Jagmeet Singh might not make it in. This is the reason why I think, to your point about, our discussion about Bo Shaw's riding, I think that has a lot to do with it. The feeling in Alberta, and I think probably nationally, I am curious to know this, is I don't understand why we tear down the Liberals as a progressive party. I'm talking about the new Jagmeet Singh going after Justin Trudeau in ways that don't serve the country. You know, it's showing something that, and I think that's something that hasn't landed well with a number of Albertans. I think we've said, you know, what are we doing here? If we're not trying to work together and be more honest about what's going on, because, you know, there's a climate crisis and real affordability crisis happening. And it's not honest to try and level the playing field and just go after the incumbent. As you're saying, we've got a Liberal Party. I appreciate they don't want to lose their seats, and that's where it's coming from. But it doesn't talk. And I have to say, I'm going to correct myself a little bit in saying I was really impressed with Jagmeet Singh in the debate last night. I thought he did an excellent job of holding Pierre Poilievre to account. And I think he did an excellent job of being honest, as did Carney, in my opinion, back with Jagmeet. He gave him a couple, yes, you're right, sirs. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's what I want to see more of. And
it can happen. The Liberals and the New Democrats can sit at a table together and talk.
Right.
Yes. And unfortunately, as a very progressive individual, I call myself a democratic socialist. I am a political orphan in this country. There is no party that really, truly represents who I am as a person. Overwhelmingly, that's just been the New Democrats over the years, because they're just kind of the closest, I guess. But I've never voted Liberal in my life. This will be the first election that I'm voting Liberal, because it's just the right thing to do. And coming from me, somebody who is an anti-capitalist, doesn't like, is all into socialism, I'm looking at the Liberals and going, guys, they're fine. They're not great. I have my reservations. I have my concerns, 100%. But I look down to my friends down south. I have family in the United States. I have friends in the United States. I used to go to the United States a lot for work. It's not the United States that I remember. And I don't want that. And if that means I got to vote for the banker, I'll vote for the banker.
Well, and I don't know.
It sucks. It's a pit in my stomach, but I got to do it. It's just, I got to do it.
Yes. And the reality is, it is an economic thing too, right? So if we want to simplify it to an economic discussion, this is somebody with merit who works in the, as he said last night, the EU and China are our biggest purchasers of Chinese, of Canadian exports. Yes. And they want carbon. They want to address climate. The reality is, these are our biggest economic opportunities. And as I think he rightfully said last night, we will hurt the industries by contributing to something that isn't going to have a purchaser. You know, a phrase that's been coming up for me this week is, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have the best intentions for an industry to help them, you know, continue. Yet, if there's no purchaser, that's not helping them either, right? We need to face that reality. And so I think that's where I can get aligned with, you know, I've had people say, oh, Carney's going to take the party to the center. We've been subsidizing the oil and gas industry more than any country in the G20. You know, this is not, we need to help. And I will say that, at least with a Liberal government, we know that they will listen to public pressure. And that's the concern we have.
I agree. Sorry, continue, please.
No, that was all I was going to finish with, is that's my concern I have from the Conservative Party of Canada, is that it's not an honest conversation. You know, what's happening in the States
That's the thing. And I got to take a page from the great Rick Mercer, who knows politics in this country like nobody else.
Right.
On top of being a very funny, funny man, he's got his finger on the pulse. He knows what people are talking about. And he did a podcast last year sometime, right when we started to go, oh, it's election year 2025. Like, now we got to start to pay attention. And he said it best, that a lot of political commentators, people who've worked in politics, Rick Mercer himself, myself included, know who Pierre Poilievre is. I remember Pierre Poilievre when I worked on the Hill. He was a junior member at the time. He was just, I hate to say this, and I'm not trying to slander the guy, he was the asshole. He was the jerk. Like, everyone thought he was. Like, that was what his perception was on the Hill. So when he became leader and progressed up, I'm like, who? That guy? Really? Like, I knew who Pierre Poilievre was. But a lot of Canada was kicking the tires on Pierre Poilievre. They were like, who's this guy? He's kind of saying things that I like to hear. Carney wasn't in the picture yet, or at least formally in the picture yet. Trudeau was waning in popularity day by day by day. He just kept shedding away people supporting him. But then when an adult showed up in the room, and that's Mark Carney, people were like, well, I like what that guy's saying. He's saying a lot more smarter things. Yeah. Right. And he has a resume. He has a track record. We're dealing with some things right now with our former ally, as I say, to the South. And I'm sorry, I'm perfectly content putting the guy at the table that dealt with Brexit and dealt with the 2008 financial crisis right now. I'm not saying let's do this again in 2029, right? But I'm saying right now, I think this is the right move. That's my personal opinion.
That's right. Yeah. Like, this is somebody who is qualified. If the argument was, and it was strong here, that Justin Trudeau wasn't qualified, this is somebody who is qualified. And I would say there's no other candidate that is more qualified to lead our country right now. And I'm really grateful for those alliances that he made in the EU and his understanding of the situation, you know. So that being said, there is pressure from outside that is not necessarily being honest. And so we have to make sure that we support him as the public and uphold the reality of the situation that we're in and expect more from our leaders at the same time.
I also want to make it clear, from a smart voting perspective, though, I'm not overwhelmingly endorsing Liberals here. I'm endorsing strategically voting, because like we've discussed already, there are some ridings that the Liberals are not the choice.
Let's be specific. Since we have a little time, JB, would you mind walking through Alberta? Just talk through the ones that are close and where their leanings go.
Yeah, so let me sort this by vote splitting. One second. So in Alberta, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ridings that are vote split. Of those, none of them are strongholds for the Conservatives. They're all either toss-ups or leans for the Conservatives, or just a general toss-up. Overwhelmingly, we're recommending Liberals. Edmonton West, we're recommending the Liberals. Riverbend Northwest, Manning are all recommended Liberals. Edmonton Griesbach, we're recommending the New Democrats. And in Calgary Crowfoot and Calgary Centre, we're recommending the Liberals. These are based off of the numbers we have. A lot of them are being broken ties by the swings. The swing is just better for the Liberals than it is for the New Democrats. So that's that. And I want to make it clear that could change by voting day. That could shift, right? So we are encouraging people to keep checking. Right. If you're standing in line to go vote this weekend, before you step foot inside that polling place, check your phone, go to smart voting. It auto reads your location so you can know exactly where you are, and it'll tell you who's the best person in that very second. Like, who is this? Because I would feel terrible if somebody early voted and then the recommendation changed, but that's a reality that could happen, right? Yeah. So
are you seeing some movement in Alberta? Like, I am curious now that you talk about that, you have the capability of seeing the swings.
So let me sort this by Alberta just real quick. Just give me 2 seconds and I will put that filter on. Sorry, this is a massive sheet. So every time I click something, it's like, it's got to think for a hot minute. Alberta. Oh, sorry. Okay. So in Alberta, just taking a look at the swings, the Liberals are overwhelmingly in a positive swing. Okay. So there is a couple ridings where they're negative, but only negative one or flat at zero. But in Edmonton, Manning, the Liberals have gained 6 points since the start of the election.
Wow.
Calgary, Minipour, which is going to go conservative, is they've gained 5 points.
Still, that's big for an area in the south of Calgary.
That's Edmonton Riverbend has gained 5 points. Edmonton West is 2. Calgary Shepherd and Nose Hill both gained 4. Calgary Confederation have gained 4. So there is noticeable gains for the Liberals in Alberta. But when I swing over to the New Democrats, it's overwhelmingly negative. Like, it's negative everything. The only person that's holding strong is Blake at Edmonton Griesbach. He's flat at 0. He hasn't moved. He's stayed firm at 34. Even Heather McPherson is down a couple points in her riding in Edmonton Strathcona.
But that's when you would recommend.
Heather's going to win. Heather's going to win her wedding. Okay, that's great. Yeah. That's, there's no worries there. Maybe that's why she's down a point, because people are feeling comfortable maybe voting liberal or voting green or whatever, right? The new Democrats are going to win. But like down in Sherwood, up in Sherwood Park, NDP's down 5 points. Edmonton Center, they're down 5 points. Calgary Heritage, they're down 5 points. The New Democrats fielded a candidate in every riding in Alberta. Shout out to them. But poor old Ponoka, you know, the most conservative riding in the country, I might add, the conservatives are going to win this riding by 82%.
In the liberal, Ponoka?
Ponoka, Didsbury, the conservatives are slated to get 82% of the vote. Wow. They have a conservative candidate, a new Democratic candidate, and a PPC candidate, and the PPC is second. Like, it is.
Wow.
This is a conservative area that the liberals didn't even put a candidate there. They were like, no point. No point spending the money, finding somebody, didn't even parachute somebody in. Just, it's the only place they're not running a candidate in the country is Ponoka.
That is so interesting. Well, thank you so much. This is super helpful, JB. I've really appreciated learning from you. So any other thing that anybody needs to do on your site? So they don't, you don't take in any information from voters. It's all just about the candidates and what's happening.
So okay. I, we don't collect any user data. We don't keep any of that. If you do share your location with us, it's in the moment. We don't store any of that. It's not saved in some secret thing. We are, if I can take a minute to talk about our long-term plans, please. Because we've been getting a lot of questions like, election's over. What are you guys going to do? Like, what's your next step? The next election is not going to be for 4 years. Obviously, we're going to be there if any provincial contests pop up. There is, you know, the potential of Alberta. I don't know what the hell's going to happen in Alberta over the next few years here, but
hopefully, an early one.
I don't think Danny's going to make it for till the end of her term, to be honest. Quebec, it might be having an election this year, end of this year or early next. They have to have one next year. And there's all these premiers resigning in Newfoundland and PEI, so there might be something in the Maritimes. But what we're going to be using smart voting for is an education tool. We're going to start to talk about civic engagement and what is voting? How do we vote? What is electoral reform? What do we want in our mission? And hammer down on getting people more educated on this thing called voting and elections and our parliament and that system. But the other thing we are going to start to do is we're going to start to do our own polling. So we have already started the process to register as a pollster in this country. And we are going to be building out an application that will live on people's phones. Then we will then have to collect user data and put that in. But it's all going to be consent-based. You opt into this kind of stuff. Right. And if you're willing to share, we'll take, you know, like how much money you make, what's your postal code, stuff like that. And our intention with polling is to solve that problem we started off with, where how do we get regional polling? And our vision is, if I have the ability to push a button on a system and it push notifies everybody who lives or is currently standing in a certain geolocation, because we would be able to see that, I can do a targeted poll in an area that might be topical. I desperately want targeted polling out of Hamilton, Steeltown, heavily affected by the steel and aluminum tariffs.
No kidding.
I want to know what Hamilton is thinking, and we have nothing. Not a cricket of polls coming from that area. And me as a data nerd, I'm like,
they have
tariffs on their stuff right now.
No kidding.
People are losing their jobs in that town on temporary layoffs. I want to poll there. I want to poll Oshawa when the auto workers, just a bunch of auto workers just got laid off. I want to talk to them. I want to talk to New Brunswick and the fisheries who are now getting tariffed from a lot of stuff.
Well, and oil and gas has been tariffed 10% as well.
Right,
so people aren't talking about this. There's a lot of stress in the industry. My son is actually looking to be a welder. And, you know, the job search is nil right now.
Right.
For him.
And that's why I want to pull Grand Prairie and I want to pull Fort Mac. I know it's going to be conservative, but like, I want to see if there's a story there of shedding votes to liberals for the first time. I have a friend who lives in Grand Prairie. And they told me they're seeing not a lot, but more red signs than they typically see.
Yeah.
And these big pollsters, and I have mad respect for all of them. They do good work. They mean well. They're doing what they need to do. But they don't regionalize it because they just don't have the technology and resources to do it. So what smart voting is going to do is use technology in our favor and get this data into the ether and say, you know, we're not going to do national polls. We're going to do targeted regional polls, topical, based off of what's currently going on in Canada and in the world. And fantastic. I think that's going to be very valuable data for people. It's really going to paint a good picture. And that's what our mission and our goal is, on top of trying to get true electoral reform in this country, but to give people data that they need to see. So
yeah, and we need electoral reform. I'm just adding a question that was asked here. Apparently not a lot of younger generation in the early voting turnout. Yeah, great point. So can you speak to that, please?
If I may, because I trucked my butt over to my early voting location today. I didn't vote today. I vote on election day. I make it a thing. I bring the kids. We make it this whole thing because my parents dragged me to polls when I was a kid, and I really actually enjoyed that. And that's what actually got me really engaged in politics. I digress. But I went there and I talked to the wonderful poll worker, nice old lady. She said to me, I asked her, I have to identify myself as a registered person with Elections Canada. And I said, can I ask you what's turnout been like? I live in a rural urban town north of Toronto. We're considered GTA, but it's conservative, like thick and thin. And I'm driving around town, driving my kids to school, taking them to swimming. And I'm like, there's a lot of red. There's a lot of red, and I've never seen this much red in this town. And RMP is a conservative, and if Pierre was to win, will probably become a cabinet minister. Like, he's in that caliber, very popular.
Okay. Wow.
And I said to her, I was like, I'm looking at the line, and it's lined up around the corner, out the door. And I'm like, and it's young people. Like, it is young people. And I'm like, what's turnout been like? And she's like, I've worked polls for the last 20 years in this town, early and on election day. She's never seen it this busy. I spent the morning down in Kitchener Center, like I said, and we went to a early polling center there, very young town in general, right? And young talent lined up at the door and around the corner, all young people and families with their kids. And it gave me sort of hope that the youth are going to turn out this election. And I think it's because of, as you said, young people are having a hard time finding jobs. There's this uncertainty of building homes. And when am I going to get into home ownership? Am I going to be even able to pay off my student loans when I get out of university? We've seen campus turnout to be higher than ever right now. So I would challenge, maybe in certain regions, we're not seeing youth turnout very high, but in the GTA, which, sorry, Alberta, we got the most seats, okay? Like, we Ontario is just 124 seats. I can't control that, right?
Right.
We are seeing a lot of engagement. I've never seen this many lawn signs in the GTA at all, and I've lived here for decades. And and one more point I will say is, back in my hometown up in Ottawa, where the two leaders are running, Carleton and in Nepean, I was talking to my friend who lives in Pierre's riding in Carleton, and he told me, he's like, I've never seen this town this politically engaged. And this is Ottawa. This is the capital engaged town as it is.
Well, there was Markham Hislop, who's a friend of mine that hosts a podcast. He had a conversation with a pollster, and he was saying this swing that between the conservatives to the liberals is the biggest swing in the Canadian history, is what he was describing. Yep. And potentially in the world, like, it's never been seen before, the swing that we've witnessed.
This election, regardless of what happens, who wins, is going to be written in papers. It's going to be studied by academia. There's going to be books written about this thing. Mark my words. Because once this is over and the numbers are out there, I'm sure every political science class across this great country is going to be heavily analyzing every point of this. And one area I really want people to watch on the night of the 28th, when they tune in to see the results, is Ottawa. And there's a very good reason for that.
Yeah.
One, both leaders are there. to this is the first election, federal election, since the convoy. And let me tell you something, as somebody who's from that town who has people personally affected by what the convoy did, the wounds are still open.
Yeah.
And the people of Ottawa want revenge. They're like, I didn't like this.
No kidding. And well, it was criminal. Let's be honest.
It was criminal. It was, I didn't tell people this, but I covered the convoy quite heavily on my social channels because I have a channel that I post stuff on. And I told people I was in Toronto that time, but I was on the streets of Ottawa. I was watching people. I went home, spent time with my friend who lived right downtown, and we were out on the streets every day, not protesting, not supportive of the convoy, but just there. And we ended up having to go stay at his uncle's because the horn noise was too high. And it was torture. It was torture. And the people of Ottawa have not forgotten that. They are tired of this. And Pierre gave coffee and donuts to these people. And that city is going to be one to watch because those wounds are still open. And I think turnout in Ottawa might even eclipse 90%. Like, people are ready to go there.
Very cool. Which is
crazy to think about, that we could have a region that has a 90% turnout, but we'll
no
see.
Kidding. We'll see. Wow. I'm excited. JB, I'd love to do a follow-up after the election.
And yes, let's do it.
Thank you. Okay. I did want to say one more thing, and this is a bit of a different or like same topic, but a little bit of a reach because you helped me remember. I wanted to talk about UK and France, if we can quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's my understanding. Again, I'm not a political person. I've told you that, but geophysicist. So France, I understand, got the first minority government ever. Is that right?
They've had it before, but they have coalition rules. So if you don't get a majority, you have to make a majority. So they are forced to coalition in some capacity, not at the presidential level, but at their regional levels, they have to do that. So,
And then the UK as well, this struck a chord with me because I was looking at their results and when you look at the age group distribution of who voted for the Labour Party, it is primarily the youth. The youth came out to vote in the UK is what I interpreted from that.
Huge numbers.
So can you talk a little bit about how they did that? Because there was discussion. I remembered hearing that there were candidates that actually dropped out of the race.
This is gonna sound very full circle, but you want to know how the UK had such a high youth turnout? They had a conversation on strategic voting.
Wow.
There's been a lot of academics in this country that have spoken out against what we're doing and the work that we're putting out. They say strategic voting doesn't work. And I always rebuttal, let's talk about the last UK election, an election where the Conservatives were in power for, in my opinion, way too long. Then you had the Reform Party that was being pesky and annoying and potentially could take some seats. And the Social Democrats, which is like their NDP, their Greens, and their Labour Party, basically didn't formally sit down and make an agreement. But there was an unofficial agreement between voters that if the Labour is supposed to win in your riding, vote Labour. If the Social Dems are supposed to win in your riding, vote Sock Dem. For the Greens, vote Green. That was the understanding, and the youth understood that assignment and they showed up.
It's like the GameStop thing, but in voting almost.
It was unreal to watch. I covered the UK election live on my socials and I was like, I'm going to be up until this is 6 hours difference. I'm going to be up until so much late in the day. I was done by 5:30 in the afternoon because I was like, it's called Labour majority.
Wow.
I can go to bed. I can go about with my day because it was just. It was just this consensus, and I'm hopeful, cautiously optimistic, I think is the better word, that that's going to be the case next week. I think we are 10 days away from this thing, seeing reports from across coast to coast of the early voting numbers, just in every corner of this country being, you know, 4 hours. We got a report from somebody in Montreal that the early voting, and it took them 4 hours to get to that, to get the pen on a paper. And
that's incredible.
And they looked around and it was all young people and families and middle class individuals just enjoying their day off. On it's a beautiful day in this area of the country, too. It's 22 degrees. I'm seeing people walking down the streets in my small town with their voter cards in hand and their kid in another hand going to vote. And statistically speaking, early voting favors progressives. That's right. That's the numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Some vote conservative. I'm not going to say they don't, but early voting overwhelmingly favors progressive voters or vote parties and candidates. So I'm optimistic that we will be able to have a UK, and I'm optimistic that Canada will make the right choice to this year. We are at our deciding point. I've been telling my American friends, they asked me like, what's the point? What's the importance of this election for you guys? I'm like, this is our 2016 for you guys. You guys had to make a choice. Now you picked Donald Trump. Bad choice, but you got like, this is our point in time where we are going to tell the world that we're okay with populism and hyper conservatism, or we're going to pick the boring banking dad, right? Like that's the decision. And as somebody who had a boring dad, I look at Mark Carney and I go, okay, I'm okay with him leading. Funny enough, fun story, if I may, I ramble a lot. When Mark Carney gave his victory speech and his daughter came up on stage and said, "Dad burns me CDs on my birthday still."
Aww.
My dad does that. And I'm like, ah, damn it. I'm going to be voting liberal. Like that was my deciding point. I'm like, damn it.
That's
that
great.
That was my point. But
I had somebody said they were voting for me for my Converse shoes. So I get it. As you were talking, I was thinking about how relieved I am to have somebody like Carney who stepped up to lead this country. So I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for this effort that you've done, JB. I think it's necessary. We need a lot of reform. You said this, we need a better not first past the post strategy in Canada. And we're not going to get there by folding down to two parties. So look at your riding, pay attention to the swing voting, make sure you know that which candidate is leading, and, you know, support the candidate that is going to at least lead us to a place where we can work together and be held accountable at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think. No, that's a very good point. And I want to make it also clear that despite you go to my website or you go to our website, I should say, more work is being done by our volunteers than me some days. But we go to the website and you look and you see, oh, man, I don't want to vote liberal. And if you don't want to go in and vote liberal, if you still want to go vote New Democrat or Green or whatever, even if you want to vote conservative, I will never shame anybody for voting. I think as much as I will sit at a table and I will vigorously disagree with a conservative, I will never be able to vote conservative in my life because I fundamentally do not agree with the things that they want to do. But I will never shame anybody in voting that way. I will never. And I just want people to vote. And I want us to be able to vote in a system that is fair, that represents everybody. And I dream of a day that I can hit that big red button and just turn smart voting off forever, where we don't have to do this. We can just go and vote for who we want to go vote for. And people like you, Jenny, can go run as a candidate for the first time and maybe not win, or maybe you do win. And it's a really cool story. And that's what I want in this country. And that's ultimately what smart voting is for, not to stick it to the conservatives. It's just, we need to do it. We need a better system. And the only way we're going to get this system, because the candidates don't want to do it, the parties don't want to do it. They say they do, but they don't want to do it. It's going to take us doing it for them. And what this model does is it basically is proportional representation in a nutshell. That's we're forcing proportional representation on the electorate. And
that's an excellent point. Well, thank you very much for this work and for your time today, especially that it's a holiday. I appreciate it so much. Hope you have a great rest of your long weekend, and we'll chat after the election. Good luck.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, take care for now.